helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. There has been a lot of hype in the media around the March jobs report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. As with all political reports, it appears the truth is neither as good as the government wants you to believe, nor as bad as their political opponents would suggest. A bit of research should help us find the good, the bad, and the ugly in this latest propaganda report. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, I know statistics and reports and stuff, probably not the most exciting thing you were thinking of. You didn't get up this morning, maybe have that cup of coffee going, oh boy, I hope we're going to talk about statistics today. Maybe I'm weird and that I find some of these really, really interesting. What I want to do, though, is recognize that, first of all, I have a friend. He always said, if you want to not be disappointed, assume the news is half as good as they say it is and twice as bad as they say it is. And I kind of want to do a little bit. I want to look a little deeper into these, to the reporting and into the report, and see just how good things really are and maybe how bad things really may be, and see if we can find out, can we get as close to the truth as possible? So guess what? I downloaded the report from the BLS website. It says, total non-farm payroll employment rose by 303,000 in March, and the unemployment rate changed little at 3.8%. Job gains occurred in healthcare, government, and construction. Going into what's called the household survey data. It says both the unemployment rate at 3.8% and the number of unemployed people at 6.4 million changed little in March. The unemployment rate has been in a narrow range of 3.7% to 3.9% since August of 2023. So let's ask a couple of questions about this. First of all, the unemployment rate, I have always held, well, not always, for as long as I can remember, once I learned about this, that the presented unemployment rate is a bit of a bodge, all right, because it's looking at the people who want a job and are employed or are unemployed, right? So 3.8% of the people who want a job apparently are unable to or are unemployed. They at least say they want a job. So the 6.4 million that are unemployed are people who are people. It doesn't take into account people who have given up. People who said, I'm not going to work. It's easier to stay on welfare. I'm frustrated. I can't. That isn't in there. So that's one thing I want you to take with just a bit of salt. Because if we get to a little farther down, we read that both the labor force participation rate at 62.7% and the unemployment population ratio at 60.3% were little changed in March. So less than two-thirds of people who are of working age or whatever they decide is eligible to work are participating, less than two-thirds. It means over a third of the people who we would expect to be working are not working. And that is a concern to me. It's a concern not simply from the question of unemployment, but it's a moral concern. If we have people who are of working age and are not working, what is the hazard to that? What is the moral hazard to that? What are the hazards to our society of people who can work or people who in general, we would say can work. So I don't know how they calculate all those numbers as far as who is eligible to work. It's a concern. I would want to see more people working. But there's another concern. It's the number of people who want to work full-time but only have part-time jobs. That turns out to be 4.3 million people. And again, they say it's little changed in March. We're not seeing huge swings. But again, we're seeing people who, maybe you had your hours cut and you're no longer a full-time employee. Maybe you pick up a second job, a second part-time job to fill in. There's a lot of questions that this can bring in. Also, the fact that there are 5.4 million people who want a job. They're not in the labor force, but they want a job. That changed a little. So on the one hand, we're looking at saying we're not seeing huge changes, and the numbers we're seeing are not really that bad. At least that's what the report is putting out. If we look at the establishment survey data, we see things like, all right, non-farm payroll rose by 303,000 people in March. This is an increase over the average monthly gain over the past 12 months. In other words, this number is higher. But you really have to take it with a grain of salt, because almost all of these reports get revised down, meaning 303,000 is not going to be 303,000 probably at the next monthly report, because they're going to revise it down to something else, and we'll probably get something closer to the 231,000. But where are these jobs being created? There were 72,000 jobs created in healthcare. Okay. There were 71,000 added in government, and construction saw 39,000. Now, let's look at those numbers, right? So the construction, the building of things, that may still be restricted by the weather, right? I live in Tennessee, and, you know, they can build most of the year, but up north, yeah, maybe not so much. But there were 71,000 new jobs created in government. Right, that's the monthly average over the last 12 months has been 54,000. Now, this gets read in as, we're creating jobs, but we're creating government jobs. The problem with that is government jobs are not a net increase in the economy. Government doesn't create anything out of raw materials. It takes from someone else to provide you a service. Now, the other thing that showed interest in here is the fact that there was very little change over major industries: mining, oil and gas, manufacturing, wholesale trade, transportation, warehousing, financial. There was very little change in these areas. So as we look at this, let's start looking at this. Is my, and again, I'm not an economist. I'm only looking at the summary data. I'm not getting into all the tables and statistics. This is what the BLS report published. What do I see? I see what appears to be the fastest growing sector of our economy, job-wise, is government jobs. You know, there's a joke, right? Good enough for government work. Now, these are governments at all level, right? Federal, state, and local. And we're seeing an increase in these jobs. Shouldn't be a surprise, as we've watched more and more the bureaucratic state kind of take over in our lives. We haven't seen manufacturing jobs. In fact, I don't think that there was a manufacturing job created in these. And, so again, number one is government. Looks like number two is healthcare. And number three is construction. Maybe it's hospitality. Take that back. Hospitality, leisure and hospitality. Overall, is this a healthy look for our economy? Well, it certainly is not as good as the Biden administration would lead us to believe, right? When we put this in context, it's not awful. It's not like, the wheels are coming off and the economy's crashing. This is absolutely true. It's kind of plugging along at this, I don't want to say an anemic state, but it definitely, it's a state that's heavily weighted toward government, healthcare, which is government regulated. I mean, really shouldn't be a surprise that the two biggest gains are two areas controlled by government. So what we're seeing is a very government-centric increase in the labor market, from my standpoint. This is what I'm seeing. But the other thing I'm seeing in here is the average hourly earnings for private non-farm payroll. I mean, if you're not in the government and you're not working on a farm, the average payroll went up about 0.3%. And according to the report, over the past 12 months, the average hourly earnings have increased by a total of 4.1%. Now, okay, that sounds nice, except that just about keeps up with inflation, the overall inflation. We'd have to look at the inflation for things like food and energy, which are generally kept out of the inflation numbers because they're so volatile, to say, okay, maybe you're earning more, but you're still falling behind. So I look at this, and again, I admit I'm not a fan of the Biden administration. And I look at this and I have to say, okay, things are not as bad as I thought they would be. But I also tend to see that things are not as good as we would be led to believe. But as I said before, I'm not an economist. I don't do this for a living. This is just me looking at what the government said and their summary and putting my understanding on it. So let me go to some people who tend to do this, well, I want to say more for a living. So I read an article from Alfredo Ortiz. He's the president of Job Creators Network. And he said, the numbers went up 303,000. But he pointed out that almost half of that came from unproductive government or quasi-government healthcare sectors. Gee, kind of like what I was saying. So half of those numbers don't actually increase the economy. He went on to look at the household survey, which includes self-employed workers, which I didn't realize. And he points to things like full-time jobs actually declined in March. Those people working full-time went down, while the number of part-time jobs, well, he says, exploded. And overall, there are 400,000 fewer Americans employed than in November. Right? This is his understanding. This is what he's reporting. And that's interesting because, again, there's two factors that come to mind. If you were working full-time and now you're only working part-time, well, then you're employed, but you're not making as much money. Of course, the other possibility is if you are working full-time and now it takes two part-time jobs to pay your bills, well, you have one person showing up filling two different jobs. It kind of skews the numbers a little bit, at least the way I understand it. Again, I told you, I'm not an expert. I don't play one on TV. But there's another twist to this that is not recorded in that report, but I think is worth looking at. And that's, how do people feel? You know, it's the old line, you're going to believe me or your lying eyes. And I want to listen to the people who are out there saying, well, this is what we're seeing. The I don't want to say the twisting. Putting a report in its best light is not unique to the Biden administration. This is nothing new. This has been going on probably pretty much as long as we can all remember. So I don't blame this strictly on Biden and his administration, but I want to look at how people feel. See, according to a poll cited, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, there was a national poll of small business owners, and they say by a 2-to-1 margin, the economy is getting worse, not better. Now, why is that important? Well, as much as we like to focus on the big corporations, it's actually the small business owners that employ most of the people in this country. And when we talk about, a annual 4% increase in the cost of living, is that being offset by inflation? Because according to a Wall Street Journal analysis, grocery bills are up 37%. Now, at least that's since the pandemic, right? So that's over several years. But you average that out, if the grocery bills are going up 8, 10% and your income's going up 4%, you're losing ground. And in fact, according to, and I didn't see where this is, the Daily Caller claims that the American family pays an extra $12,000 annually in inflation. This is the cost of inflation. And does your 4% increase turn out to be $12,000? If not, you're losing ground. I want to talk about some other things, some related things, and get into, but before I do that, I have to take a break. Now, I was asked again this weekend, how can we improve, how can someone can improve their understanding of the Constitution? It's foundational to protecting your rights. And it varies. Different people are in different places. It's why I developed the Constitution Study Planning Wizard. So go to constitutionstudy.com/wizard and answer a few questions. Yes, I asked for your name and your email address, but answer a few questions about when you last studied, how hard was it, what goals do you have? And the system will begin generating emails to you with ideas, suggestions. Now, the Planning Wizard is free, and many of the ideas it suggests it are free. It's not there to make money. It's there to help you start your journey or to continue your journey to becoming more literate about the Constitution, because boy, we need that. I was working on an article the other day, and an entire supposedly First Amendment case at the Supreme Court through oral arguments by both the respondent and the a person making the claim, even the Solicitor General in what's supposedly a First Amendment case, never actually quoted the Constitution once. We need to be better than that. It starts with us understanding the Constitution. Just give it a try. constitutionstudy.com/wizard. Answer those questions. And if those emails help, great. And if they do, let me know. I kind of have an interest in this. Now, the other thing I mentioned earlier, we're dealing with the aftermath still of the scamdemic, the destruction that it did to our economy. And in many cases, this destruction is done to our body. We talk about long COVID. We talk about shedding. And a lot of people are concerned. A lot of people have these issues, whether they're vaccinated or not. Well, the people at the wellness company have done some very interesting research, and they have a product that helps to block and dissolve the spike proteins that are causing these problems. Now, backed by documented research and vetted by the chief medical board of the wellness company, spike support is one of the products you can use to help you live a healthier life. You can use these to prevent getting the protein or to help flush the protein from your body. And because you listen to America Out Loud, you can get 25% off of their products and off of your first month membership at the wellness company if you use the code OUTLOUD. So please check it out. Go to americaoutloud.shop. Find the wellness company, find the spike protein ad, check it out, put your order together. Make sure when you check out, you use that code out loud. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off of products and off of your first month of membership at the wellness company.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, HealthyCell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And HealthyCell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution City. I'm glad you're here today. We're looking at the job number report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I'm reminded of something. See, I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan ran against Jimmy Carter for presidency in 1980. And I'm also old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan, there was a debate between Reagan and Carter, and in his opening statement, I think his opening statement, Ronald Reagan asked what I think is a very important question.
Next Tuesday, all of you will go to the polls, will stand there in the polling place and make a decision. I think when you make that decision, it might be well if you would ask yourself, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier for you to go and buy things in the stores than it was 4 years ago? Is there more or less unemployment in the country than there was 4 years ago? Is America as respected throughout the world as it was? Do you feel that our security is as safe, that we're as strong as we were 4 years ago? And if you answer all of those questions, yes, why then I think your choice is very obvious as to who you'll vote for. If you don't agree, if you don't think that this course that we've been on for the last 4 years is what you would like to see us follow for the next four, then I could suggest another choice that you have.
I'm not going to make a suggestion as to who you should or shouldn't vote for, but to me, it's interesting. Are we looking back at the last 4 years and asking, are we better or are we worse? Are we better off or are we worse off? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, yeah, there's some things that we are better than we were 4 years ago. 4 years ago, we were heading into this scamdemic, and there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of stuff going on. In many ways, yeah, from that, we are better. Of course, we are also coming out of a lot of things that were that happened in those first couple of years that were disastrous to our country, disastrous to freedom, disastrous to your rights, to our liberties. But I would say in most scenarios, are you better or are you worse? Now, it's assumed pretty safely that the primary names on the tickets are going to be Biden and Trump, and we have examples from both of them of what their economic platforms were like. So since we're talking about the BLM platform, the BLM report, let's focus a bit more on this idea of Bidenomics. Now, I find it interesting. Most people, you know, we heard about Reaganomics. And this, it kind of got to be this catchphrase, kind of like gate, right? Every scandal became a gate. And now, you know, every president's economic profile is anomics, right? You had Obamanomics, you had Trumponomics, you had Bushonomics. I mean, well, not so much Bushonomics. But it's this idea of we identify. And part of it is we're identifying with the president, although much of the policies that have put us in this situation don't actually come out of the White House. This idea that everything that happens in the federal government comes out of the White House is baloney. And it really hides a lot of what's going on. Part of the reason why there's such a growth in the government and healthcare sectors in employment is because of the policies established some of the laws established by Congress that have created these agencies that create up rules and imaginations just to make life, to justify themselves, and that often have a detrimental effect on the American people. So when we look at this, we see a growth in part-time employment. Sure, you could look and say, well, you know, the president had through his illegal employment agencies and whatnot have created policies that makes it harder for people to hire people full time because of all the rules and regulations around that. It's easier to deal with part-time people, but many of those got put in place because Congress passed the Affordable Care Act that said if you work more than so many hours a week, I think it was 32, if you had an employee that worked more than 32 hours a week, you had to give them health insurance of a certain quantity, quality that the government determined. That pushes things down part-time. It also tends to push things in the towards big business, right? Because when I worked in corporate America, when I worked for Fortune 100 companies, these are huge companies. They all had health insurance plans. Every employee got a health insurance plan. Long before the Affordable Care Act, it was the small mom and pops that said, I'm a small business, I'm a small corporation. Listen, as a benefit, I will offer you health insurance. But now the government says, the health insurance I can afford to provide you, I can't afford it. It's too expensive. So I had a choice. I could cut your pay so I could take that difference and apply it towards your health insurance. Nobody wanted that. I could cut your job and just deal with fewer people. And that happened. But I could just cut your hours. And if I make you a part-time employee rather than a full-time employee, then guess what? I don't have to provide you with that health insurance. In fact, I don't have to provide you with any health insurance now. So I actually can employ a second part-time person to get the same amount of work done. In other words, Bidenomics is not all Bidenomics. There's a lot of Bidenomics to it, but not all of Bidenomics, what we call Bidenomics, is actually Bidenomics. A lot of this has come out of Congress. For example, there's one article I saw. Oh, yeah, here it is. This one came out of the Daily Caller. And according to Arjun Singh, not a single manufacturing job was created in the month of March. Now, you can look at it two ways. At least I look at it. This can be for a couple of reasons. One is the government has created such a anti-manufacturing business policies in place that manufacturing jobs aren't being created because manufacturing businesses cannot afford to be in the United States. There's a reason why your clothes are made in China and not the United States in general. There's a reason why your cars are assembled in are primarily built in Mexico, not the United States. Or at least the parts are built overseas and then shipped to the United States for final assembly. They do that for tax and other reasons. But there's a reason why many of those jobs have moved overseas, because the cost of those jobs have been inflated by government regulation. That didn't come simply from the president. That's come from, and many of those have come from, Congress. So when I see this about no manufacturing jobs, people talk about wanting manufacturing jobs, but they don't do what they need to do about manufacturing jobs. We'll talk about what they actually do in a few minutes. Before I go there, I want you to recognize something else. We saw this a lot under Obama. I don't remember it being under Clinton. That may be just my memory. I distinctly remember Obama, where the government would create all these programs to borrow billions of dollars to effectively make jobs, right? We had Obama had the literally make work jobs just to employ people. It goes all the way back to FDR and the depression that he made, the Great Depression, or his policies helped make the Great Depression, where the idea was to make people work, but they weren't an economic benefit. It was the robbing Peter to pay Paul type scenario. And that has a long-term effect. So when we look at Bidenomics, we can look at things like, yeah, there are some things that are not as bad as predicted, but you know what? We've got a lot of things that, they're okay. They're working. And I should say they aren't working. You have 303,000 new jobs, but many of them are part-time jobs. And with all the complaint about, you know, California's gone to a $20 an hour minimum wage for fast food workers because you can't support a family of four on a fast food salary. Well, duh, it was never designed to be that way. But those types of policies make it easier for places like McDonald's and Burger King and whatever to hire part-time workers rather than full-time workers. That means we have more people doing more jobs to try to get to the same outcome we once had before. And often, I think those numbers are a bit hidden. So let me go back to the question of manufacturing jobs. A couple of news articles that brought this to my attention. This one was a White House statement saying that the Commerce Department is going to take $6 billion in subsidies and offer them to a company called TSMC. You may not recognize that, but they're the ones that manufacture the chips for Apple. So the White House is going to take $6.6 billion of your money, give it to this company to build a semiconductor plant to increase semiconductor capabilities in Phoenix, Arizona. They're also going to give them a $5 billion in loans and other tax credits to encourage them to continue to do business in the United States. Now, as a national security question, I don't know how much our national security is based on Apple chips. I don't. But I have an interesting question in mind. If it takes $6.6 billion in cash on the barrelhead and another $5 billion in loans to bring TSMC to the United States and have them continue to produce in the United States, doesn't that tell you that producing semiconductors in the United States is too expensive? I mean, let's face it. If the United States was the best place, both technically and financially, to manufacture these chips, don't you think TSMC would all be trying to do that already? But what we have is the federal government taking $6.6 billion of your money and illegally giving it to a private entity, TSMC. So you have to remember, Congress, under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, can only collect taxes to do three things: pay the debts of the United States, provide for the common defense of the United States, and for the general welfare of the United States, capital U, capital S, proper noun. The very same proper noun that in the 10th Amendment says, if we didn't specifically give you this power, you don't have it. It's reserved to the states and to the people. Now, if you look at Article 1, Section 8, I think it's Clause 3 or 4, Congress has the power to regulate commerce among the several states, foreign entities, and the Indian tribes. Not to simply, oh, by the way, we're going to spend $6 billion to subsidize a particular manufacturing business. Unless you can show it will directly impact our national security, this is embezzlement. And it's interesting because, you know, semiconductor manufacturing used to exist in the United States. It moved overseas in large part because of the cost, and not just in employment, but in regulations. Creating semiconductors uses a lot of chemicals. Many of them are toxic. And we didn't want that in our backyard. We were more than happy to have it in somebody else's backyard, just not in my backyard. So we drove a lot of the semiconductor manufacturing overseas. And then we said, ooh, suddenly I can't get my chips that I need for my cars and my phones and my goodies and whatnot. So let me bribe them to come back with our money. Another example of federal government getting you to pay to fix the mistake you let them make in the first place. Now, here's another one that keep with me on this. So again, Biden is trying to find a way to bribe people who borrowed money from the government to go to college by giving them, by writing off their loans, by getting you to pay for their college education. And you say, well, what does this have to do with the, how many people took these loans to get degrees that have little, if any, economic benefit? Think about it. You go to college, you spend tens, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. You'd think you'd be looking for a degree that would help you in the long run make more money. Right? You're going to be a doctor, a lawyer, an architect, something where that degree will help you do a job where you can make money. And that's a financially sound investment, right? I'm investing $100,000 in my education because I'm going to make more than $100,000 in my lifetime lifetime employment. But if the government says, we'll lend you money to do anything, you know, underwater basket weaving, women's studies, you name it, how much of that money that was supposed to be, quote unquote, invested in people's education so they could be an economic benefit to the nation was spent on degrees that is not an economic benefit, is not a social benefit to the United States as a whole? See, there's that opportunity cost lost. How many people took this money and got degrees that's not contributing to themselves or to society as a whole? This is part of the economic plan that, again, predated Biden. Biden is trying to make it worse by saying, rather than you paying off the loan, the American people will now pay for your education. Okay, I have to take another break. I've got some more stuff for you after this break. Before I go, please head to AmericaOutloud.news every day for news and information. I do it myself. And I saw some very interesting articles, I think, you and podcasts you'd be interested in about the world around us. So do what I do. Take the links to the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, the ones that really get your attention, and share them with friends, with family, on social media. See, this idea of sharing this information is more than just sharing the news. It's helping all of us to enjoy and secure the blessings of liberty. Speaking of liberty, there's good news. You don't have to support those companies that are trying to destroy our rights and our liberties. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they share our values. They've got great nationwide 4G and 5G coverage. They use the networks and towers that the major carriers do, and they have a 100% U.S.-based customer support. They also support organizations like Turning Point, Folds of Honor, Students for Life of America, and the Constitution Study. The time is now. Use your cell phone in a way that helps stand up against the left and help make America great again. You do that by going to patriotmobile.com/constitution, find a plan that works for you, and sign up. And be sure to use the code CONSTITUTION when you sign out, and you will get free activation. Again, go to patriotmobile.com/constitution, find the plans, and use that code CONSTITUTION at checkout to get free activation.
George Washington once encouraged us to animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a free man contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth. That's exactly what we do, as you'll see when you visit AmericaOutloud.news. Now is our time. My fellow Americans, America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, But left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, Heal Right is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. And today, we started with the jobs reports, the March jobs reports, and seeing what if things are really as good or as bad as those say. And we've kind of traveled this thing into the policies, both out of Congress and out of the executive branch over the decades that have impacted this. And that's where I kind of want to go now. See, there's a report out of the Government Accountability Office that states that the federal government spent $236 billion in improper payments. The $236 billion were bad bills. They paid someone who wasn't due, or they paid too much. There was a problem with the spending. Now, what does this have to do with the jobs report and all that? I want you to think of how many jobs are now dependent on government or highly government-regulated industries. How big has the government gotten? How many trillions of dollars does the government spend on these policies that impact and distort the labor market? And then you look at it and say, well, I was having a discussion, it was a conference call a few weeks ago, and someone was talking about, well, you know, we were talking about how efficient, how good government is, how good programs are. And I said, name one. It was funny. They said, well, the post office. I said, well, they sent that private, and the post office still keeps coming back to Congress for money. They talked about welfare, and I talked about the trillions of dollars lost in mismanagement. How inefficient any government entity is at distributing charity dollars. And I keep coming to this saying, we wonder why the more we have put government in charge, the worse so many things have gotten. I'm not saying there is a causal, if not a direct causal link, between government regulation and employment. Because government doesn't have to, quote unquote, make a profit, they can waste money on jobs programs and other programs because no one expects them there to be a positive return on those investments, quote unquote, investments. It's why the federal government was not authorized to spend money except to pay our debts, protect our borders, and keep themselves running. That's why the federal government was given such a limited power to spend money. And by breaking that, by allowing the federal government to be involved in everything, those are more and more opportunities for fiscal mismanagement. Now, that's part of that is because of the size. Right? I think I don't know if the government is the largest employer in the country, but they certainly are the... I think they are the federal government's the largest single employer in the country. That I may not be right on that. But think of how much influence, how much sway, and how much pressure that puts on the labor market, on the economy, on all of these things that we depend on to help us live our lives, to help us go about our jobs, to help us do what we need to do to survive. And to realize that, again, the government is so inefficient in handling the money they take from us, often illegally. That impacts not just the economy, but that's $236 billion that was taken out of the American economy to be spent on something it wasn't supposed to be. That's $236 billion that, if left in the economy, if left in people's pockets, they could have spent on restaurants, automobiles, electronics, vacations, home improvements, gardening programs, that could, among other things, have employed even more people. So that's why the increase in the fact that government and government-regulated entities have seen such an increase in their job, the employment growth, to me is a bad thing, because all of those dollars are dollars taken out of the economy, many of them for no economic benefit. It literally is throwing bad money after, or good money after bad. And yes, we suffer the consequences of it. Before we call it a day, there's a couple other articles that caught my attention I want you to think about while we're here. One came out of the Epoch Times. It's a federal judge that, the title says, Judge Berates DOJ for Defying Congressional Subpoenas. Now, if you've listened to me for a while, hopefully you got to understand, Congress has no legal authority to issue subpoenas. There's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes Congress to demand your attendance, that you to provide any information, because they're not law enforcement. They're not part of the judiciary. They have no legal authority. Now, I could understand wanting input from other people, but the idea that our representatives can demand that we show up is an affront to the Constitution. It's an affront to the Bill of Rights. It's an affront to the Fifth Amendment. But everybody kind of plays like the Congress actually has this authority. And again, it's often abused for political purposes. But when I looked a little closer, I understood. See, Politico is reporting that U.S. District Judge Anna Rees said that there's a person in jail right now. You all brought a criminal lawsuit against him because he did not appear for a House subpoena. And now you guys are flouting those subpoenas. In other words, the DOJ is putting people in jail. They are charging them for ignoring a congressional subpoena while they ignore a congressional subpoena. But yes, it's hypocritical. Yes, it's unconstitutional. Yes, there's so many things. But again, I want you to realize, simply giving money to these agencies, to hiring more attorneys or agents, it doesn't make things better. It just makes things more bureaucratic. So that's an interesting question. You know, again, a congressional subpoena, where is the constitutional authority for Congress to issue such a subpoena? And then the Department of Justice said, well, you have to follow the subpoena, but we don't have to follow the subpoena. That's what you get from government officials. Should surprise nobody. Now, the next one actually is an election question, and that has to deal with the Nebraska legislature. See, Nebraska is one of two states that do not appoint their presidential electors in a winner-take-all manner. See, both Maine and Nebraska appoint their electors based on, I believe, it's congressional district. So whoever wins in each congressional district, whichever party gets the most votes, they get to appoint an elector. And then for the two Senate-based electors, right? Because you get the number, your representatives in the House or representative in the Senate, and the Senate, they take the statewide popular vote, and assign and appoint their electors that way. And there was a move in the Nebraska legislature to change that from a apportionment to a winner-take-all. And of course, people were going, I saw this article says this vote is a blow to Trump, that they were out to get Trump, because the idea is, the concern is, well, listen, there's one congressional district that is routinely Democrat, and since Trump is expected to win the Nebraska popular vote statewide, there's almost impossible for him to this one vote, and that could throw the presidential electors into a tie, pushing the presidential decision to the House of Representatives. And here's the problem. I think Nebraska and Hawaii have it, Maine, I think they have it right. See, if you're going if the state is going to choose electors in this convoluted, political party twisted manner, would it not be a better representation to allocate electors based on the decision of the people proportionally rather than a winner take all? I mean, I lived in New York State most of my life, and even though there were many parts of the state, there were many districts in the state that would have voted, that tended to vote Republican, New York State, never in my lifetime, never that I remember, that were New York State presidential electors anything but Democrats, because the state as a whole voted Democrat, which really meant that the representation of those other counties, other districts within the state was useless. Why bother? But I understand this is a political move, not a constitutional move, not an attempt to bring justice to the process of choosing a president, not to enforce the idea of, you know, the states elect the president, not the people. Again, look at Article 2, look at the 12th Amendment. The states appoint electors. The fact that they've decided to appoint them based on a popular vote in the state is a decision made primarily, actually, by the state government and the political parties, which means, while we're not parliamentarians, it's much more a parliamentary-style system where you don't vote for an individual, you vote for a political party, and that party's champion that gets the most votes in the most states, or a sufficient number of votes in the states, they eventually become the president. So I wanted to throw those two in because there's something I want you to think about. I want you to consider this idea of congressional subpoenas and where does Congress get the constitutional authority to issue them? And the idea of the winner-take-all presidential electors, is that the best way to do that? You think of the number of states, and again, New York, California, Michigan, Illinois, even Florida and Tennessee. See, in Tennessee, we, you know, as a state as a whole, tends to vote Republican, but in the cities, in Nashville, Knoxville, and Memphis, they tend to vote Democrat. Shouldn't their voices be heard as well? Or is this, we're more worried about our team winning, whatever gives our team the best chance, whatever gives the donkeys and the elephants the best chance? Just imagine if you actually apportioned electors based on congressional districts rather than winner take all. We might even have a third party candidate that gets more than one or two electors. Wouldn't that be interesting? And what would that do to the process and the stranglehold the donkeys and the elephants hold on our electoral process? So let's go back to the beginning. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they've issued a report for March, and it's not as bad as many people predicted. Okay. Neither is it as good as many people are saying. This really should not surprise any of us. The truth is almost always somewhere more in the middle. But what can we learn from looking at these numbers and spending a little bit of time with them? Well, we can see that the economy is kind of, or I should say the labor market is kind of just ticking over. Right, it's at an idle. It's not really growing. It's not really shrinking. It's idling. The problem with that is it also points at, in many cases, the economy is idling except for inflation, especially in areas like food and energy, which means you're idling, but we're pointing up a steep hill. And if you've ever been in a car that is pointing up a steep hill, but it's only idling, that means we're probably slipping backwards. And that's probably not a good thing. It's also the opportunity. We have an opportunity this November to ask ourselves, have the last 4 years, were they better than the previous 4 years? Are we better off or not? And I don't just mean, hey, I got a raise, so I'm making a little more money. Are you able to buy more stuff? Do you feel more secure about wars and battles and all that? Or just that things aren't going to fall apart in the future? Do you look at a $36 trillion debt and say, we're not doing anything to fix it? And that, ladies and gentlemen, should help you decide not just who you vote for which party you vote for president. Who are you voting for Congress, for governor, for your state legislature, for your county boards, for your city your city commissions? How are you deciding who you vote for? See, I think it's how you decide that has a great impact, not just on who you vote for, but as a whole, who we ask to serve us as our public servants. And are they acting more like servants or more like masters? Now, I also want to let you know that the General Flynn's movie is out. You can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie, F-L-Y-N-N-M-O-B-I-E, all one word. It's called Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. And it's, like him or hate him, at least see the other side of the story. And if you would use that link, well, it lets General Flynn and his team know that you follow the Constitution study and are helping him in what he's trying to do if you decide to purchase a copy of the movie or attend one of the live events. I also hope you come back and join us here for the Constitution study. We're heard every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen to the podcast. The episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can listen in your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave the episodes ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the Constitution study as well. If they search for Constitution on their app, I'd like them to see the Constitution study in that list, and that only happens if you help. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at americaoutloud.news. But as with everything else, this information really isn't powerful unless you share it. By sharing those links, by sharing this information, you're doing more than sharing the Constitution study. You're helping to share the blessings of liberty.